This little inconsequential-looking bit of stuff here that's growing on the side of the tree is a species of lichen that has a critical role in providing nitrogen for the forest. These guys don't start to develop until a forest gets to be about 100 years old, and then they actually take nitrogen out of the atmosphere and fix it into a form that plants can use. If we continue to tree farm, we lose habitat for these lichens, these nitrogen-fixing lichens that are adding nutrients to the soil. What you see here is a mass of fine feeder roots that are covered with this little white cottony material in here. And that's what soil scientists call mycorrhizal fungi. It's a mutually beneficial association between soil fungi and the roots of the plant that increase the ability of the plant to take up water and nutrients. And in return, the giant forest trees feed sugar down to these fungi. When you remove the above ground vegetation, clear cut, you disconnect these from their source of energy, and therefore the complex web of interrelationships that happen below our feet in the soil collapse. So we can tell that this tree survived a life-threatening fire when it was young, but then as it gets larger and larger, the bark becomes thicker and thicker and becomes more and more immune to fire. So the subsequent fires that swept through this area probably didn't even scar the tree.
We're killing Mother Earth. It's me that's doing it. It's you that's doing it. We're doing it because of our consumptive lifestyles, because we've been taught that the appropriate way to live is to define your personality and who you are by the acquisition of things that you have. And so you have a real hard time knowing any other way to live than acquiring things and defining yourself by more, more, more. So that's the first thing we need to do, is we need to admit it. With each action that you take, you ask yourself, what are the consequences of what I'm doing, and is what I'm doing sustainable? If everybody on the planet had the opportunities that I have as an American, and they all exercise those opportunities the way I'm exercising them, could we sustain that on into future generations? If the answer is no, then you're in a tough place. Because what you have to do is you have to grieve as you're going through the actions of your day.
The current raging issue is the Sugarloaf timber sale, which is just one of several of these horrible timber sales that will generate 4,000 to 5,000 truckloads of logs.
Second thing we have to begin to do is non-participation, and I'm talking about a massive non-participation in this consumer society. It's a complete redefinition of culture. What we wear, what we eat, where we live, how we transport ourselves. We need a complete redefinition of this culture. Don't feel like you can come to a rally, cast the right vote, and it's going to change. It's going to change when we all change.
This is insane. It's so sad to me that the people have to come and get arrested to take care of the forest that's in our backyards. You know, it's just ridiculous.
But now we're faced with species extinction. Extinction is not death. Extinction is the end of birth. It doesn't come back. Ever. It's because of that that we're spurred on to additional thing that we got to do. And that is, where we find unjust, unrighteous laws, we have to break them. Yeah. So the third thing I'm getting at here is civil disobedience. Woo! I ask you to hold off the timber beast as long as you possibly can and cost them as much money as you possibly can until they arrest you.
We're the future, but the way things are going, future America is going to be desolation.
These are the brothers and sisters, these are the comrades that are going to help save these places. We need to get to know each other and let this fast be part of what binds our community together, because it's going to take a lot of strength, and you're going to need to feel that strength down in your gut as you're standing up for what you believe in, as you're standing up for this life other than human life, and as you're standing up for the future generations. Thank you very much.
There's more that direct action does than actually even stop the fallers. We didn't stop the fallers that day, but we created an incredible public event. And when we create these public events and we show that Americans and as human beings, we are willing to take this stand and say enough is enough, and practice this message that enough is enough and no more raping of this land in a nonviolent way, we put pressure on the politics of America. This is a true people's movement, and we're organizing, and we're going to go down there, and we're going to try to stop these sales from happening.
You guys need help or something? What do we got? Huggers, huh? Hey, all right. No problem. Get the license, fellas.
1994 at the Winchester Dam, they counted one fish, and now they figure that there's less than 100 wild salmon left in the Umpqua, where there used to be tens of thousands.
The BLM and the Forest Service are destroying the stands that feed these streams. And what they're going to feed these streams is silt, which is going to kill off the last cutthroat trout and the last steelhead.
You wouldn't cut with us down here, would you?
Yeah, I would.
Hey, please don't cut that tree with us down here.
Hey, I'll tell you guys something. I'm colorblind, and I can't see very well, so if I have to get one of these on you, it won't be my fault.
Don't cut that tree down. There's trees in here that are very old. You don't have a right to cut them down.
If 250 million people knew this was going on, this would be stopped in a week.
Can you just tell me why you're chained up here today?
I'm chained here today because I've done it all. I've done petitions. I've, you know, collected postcards. I've met with public officials. I've lobbied. I've talked to, you know, people on the streets. Nothing upon nothing is working. This is the last stand, and I'm taking it.
Are these vehicles going to be moved with people pinned under them?
If that's the only way we can move them, that's what's going to happen.
So these vehicles will be moved with people pinned under them?
They will be moved.
They will be moved.
I think we need to salvage the old growth stuff.
All of it?
Well, I think a lot of it can be gone through.
And if this isn't greed, I don't know what is. I protest.
Boom or bust, the trees will go and the jobs will follow. No compromise or first.
Hello, my name is Tim Ream. So you just saw 12 minutes of a film that we're actually going to screen tomorrow at South Puget Sound Community College at noon. And this is a movie about a forest that was off limits to logging. until arsonists burned 9,000 acres. And then the government decided that since the arsonists burned 9,000 acres, it wasn't off limits to log anymore, and they could go ahead and log it. And we decided otherwise. There were no laws that would protect the forest. Congress, with both the Clinton administration and the Republicans, got together, took away all the environmental laws with something called the salvage rider. And there was no legislative opportunity, no way to go to court. And so what people did is they went up into the road and they dug it up. We dug up huge 10-foot trenches across the road, 10-foot wide, 10-foot deep. We built a 10-foot high fort with a moat and a drawbridge and a 20-foot high tower. And we built tarpies behind it. And we stayed for more than a year through 10 feet of snow. And we had a slogan back in those days. It was "not one black stick." And after a year of camping out on that road, we protected that forest. And they have not gotten one single black stick from that forest. So, you know, there was this kind of thing that was going on at Warner Creek that's really relevant to what we're talking about tonight, and that is most of us had a sense when we said "one black stick" that we just weren't, you know, mouthing a political slogan. We really did believe they were not going to get one black stick out of that forest. We had a sense that we were right, that we had the power, and that we had the organization to stop them. We just had that sense. We just knew we were going to win. And we were right. We won. And you know, I think that that moment comes every once in a while. You know, they're logging beautiful places all around the world right now. And I don't get involved in campaigns because I feel like I need to. I don't get involved in campaigns because I'll feel guilty if I don't. I get involved in campaigns because I want to win. Because I want to stop them. I just don't want to like do something. I want to be effective. I want to stop them. And at Warner Creek, we were effective. And we weren't just effective at like protecting a 9,000-acre timber sale, because what happened at Warner Creek spun off into all different kinds of ways, all different kinds of energies that I would say were not just about forests, that were revolutionary energies in a lot of different directions. And people from that campaign have gone all around the world doing all kinds of effective work to protect the earth, to work for social justice, and to work for environmental sanity. And those kind of moments, they come every once in a while. I was part of a campaign that took place down here in Southern Washington State, a campaign that was started by and largely, I would say, staffed by Evergreen students, a campaign to save a place called Watch Mountain. A bunch of environmentalists in Seattle wanted to trade away 5,000 acres of land that was in the public domain that had some level of protection, and they wanted to trade it away to a timber company so that they could get some land for some Seattle people to hike up around the I-90 corridor. And they picked a little politically disenfranchised place in Southern Washington called Randall, Washington. And some folks went down there and they started organizing the town of Randall, Washington. And we threw up a tree sit in Randall, Washington. Tree sitters in a timber town working together. And at first I thought, this is crazy. Like, there's no way we're going to be able to stop this thing. And then there was just that moment. We had a public meeting with like about 200 people, local town people at a public meeting. And we had me as the radical environmentalist, and we had a forester there, and we had a forest service guy who just kind of hemmed and hawed for most of the night. And we had an empty chair with the words Plum Creek Timber in front of it because the corporate people wouldn't show up. And at that public meeting, I was the last one to speak, and I was kind of like trying to rouse up the crowd, and finally this old lady in the front row, she stands up, she goes, "Let's just take a vote." I said, "Okay, how many people here want to protect the place?" And 199 of the 200 hands went up. And right then I knew, we're going to save this place. I just knew right at that moment we're going to save this place. And we had that moment, and we had a wonderful campaign, and those 5,000 acres at Old Growth Forest are pretty much right there right now. You know, and I think probably some of you here were involved in another one of those moments. Well, I know some of you were. I don't know about y'all, but I had this sense on November 29th, 1999, that we were about to shut down the most powerful institution in the world, the World Trade Organization. And we did it, you know, we did it with our bodies. We did it with just like going out there and being more organized than they were and having more heart and more spirit and more people than they had, you know, and we shut them down. And again, I mean, for like a year, you couldn't even hear a person with like a radical persuasion give a speech without mentioning the WTO. You had a situation overnight where the world couldn't have told you what the hell WTO meant. To like 2 days later, everybody knew what the WTO was. And they knew that it wasn't a good thing. You know? Well, the reason I'm bringing up all those examples is because I really believe that's where we are right now. In Southern Oregon, a place with like decades of radical direct action history, they are trying to put the largest timber sale in modern history during a presidential election summer. These people are drunk with their own power, and they're making a stupid mistake, and we're going to kick their ass down there this summer. All right? So, of course, you know, we can't do it by ourselves, and we're traveling all around, and we want to get everybody up and down the I-5 corridor. We want to get everybody around the world involved, of course, if we can. But by the time we're done, we're going to have given this presentation to more than 1,000 people, and the momentum is really building, and we already have the politicians starting to, like, back up and starting to back off the proposal, you know? And while they're backing up, we're just going to keep shoving them right backwards till they fall over backwards. And we're going to really have a serious victory at Biscuit this summer. And so it's kind of like, I want you all to help, but kind of like, hey, you want to get involved in something that's really cool where you can win? You know, this is the opportunity we have this summer. Not only that, you get to do it with like really fun people in an absolutely incredible ecosystem. You know, I advocate for a wide range of direct action styles and tactics. I'm kind of like a every tool in the toolbox kind of guy. And that being said, tonight I am going to ask you to write a letter to Congress. Ooh. And the reason I'm going to do that is because we actually think that right now, where we are in the process, the 1,000 letters that we are going to have gathered within a 3-week period, all going to Congress, is actually going to make a difference. We're worried that they're going to try to do what they did back in 1995, which is to take away the environmental laws that currently protect this place. We know we're going to beat them in court. We know that if we can hold on to the laws, they're not getting into the roadless areas, they're not getting into the old growth reserves, if we can hold on to the laws. But what they're trying to do at Biscuit is not trying to get a big timber sale that they can make a lot of money off the burned timber up there. What they're trying to do at Biscuit is they're trying to create a precedent. They're trying to create a precedent that says when a forest burns, the environmental laws don't apply anymore. And guess what? Every forest burns sooner or later. And once they have a situation where the environmental laws don't apply anymore, they turn it from a wild forest into a tree plantation. So if we let them get away with it here, it's the beginning of a process where they can turn every single wild forest that's left, and there aren't many of them, they can turn every single one of those into tree plantations. And so it's absolutely imperative that we win, and that we win completely at Biscuit. So tonight, that's a letter. And then there's a couple other things that are possibilities. Mostly what we really want to do is we want to get you down to our neck of the woods. We want you to get down there because, see, we got this little secret that we all know, and that it's an open secret, actually. We'll share it with you, which is that if you come down to this place, you're going to fall in love with this place. Because it's absolutely incredible, beautiful, diverse, amazing forest. And like Carol said, we've got cute goats, too. So that being said, I would like to now introduce a longtime activist, Peg Millett. She is more than just a great singer. She's a woman that is so dangerous, the FBI had to set her up. Ms. Peg Millett. Ha ha ha.